Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby. Mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa. Take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to ChumbaCasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
What's going on, everyone? Welcome to another episode of Kojak Conspiracy, or Just a Coincidence. I am Jack Allen. First, go follow me on the socials at Kojak Podcast on Instagram and Twitter. You can find me there, all those good things. If you want to support the show, Patreon and Venmo, I'll put the links in the but at Conspiracy or JAC for Venmo, and for the Patreon Conspiracy or Just a Coincidence. I know, it's so confusing. I know, I get it. But anyway, today's episode is with my friend, my awesome all-around guy, one of my best friends in this whole crazy podcasting and everything world, The Odd Man, who, if you've listened to the show, you've heard him a million times. But yeah, so we talked Soros, learned a lot of awesome stuff there, some Ukraine, banking, all these good topics that relate to what's going on today. So I hope you enjoy the show. Go follow Odd Man at underscore The Odd Man out. If you're not, you need to be. He's an awesome guy. He's got a great show. Does a lot of research, so much research. I respect him. So I respect anybody who reads and creates their own content. He's one of them. Such good stuff. So definitely check him out there. And tomorrow I got Don Jeffries on, the one, the only, one of my favorite authors, Don Jeffries. He's so great. He's going to be on the show talking about his new book and some other things. We'll figure it out. And then Wednesday we'll finish the history of central banking with Imperial Russia and see where that ends up. And that's it. So I'm Jack Allen, guys. Go follow me, subscribe, leave a review. Thank you for listening. God bless. Much love. Hang in there. We're going to get through it. Peace out. All right. What's going on, everyone? Welcome to another episode of Conspiracy or Just a Coincidence. I am Jack Allen. Today, I have the one and only, my friend, the Odd Man from the Oddcast. What's going on, dude?
Well, I couldn't be odder.
Ah, love it. Love it, dude. Nice. Nice. How are you been? How's the show? How's life? How's everything going?
Everything's going well. Just plodding along or prodding along. How do they say that? I don't know. One of the two. Same old same, man. Yeah, I'm starting a garden, so I'm going to try and do this fruits and vegetables and herbs type thing. And I've got a couple of fruit trees I planted last year. So
nice. What kind of fruit trees did you plant?
So I've got a pear or two pear trees and two plums. Nice. I was told that those were good to have and they work off of each other. And so
dude,
we'll see.
You're going to have to let me. So I tried to grow a lemon plant. It was 5 years, dude. I had this thing, like it moved with me. Like it got bugs one and eventually it died though. So I hope you have better luck. But it was 5 years. It lasted never. It could have produced lemons like two of the summers, but it would get bugs. And yeah, but so fruit trees are like difficult, you know. Interested to see. I think you have to like cover them in the winter, but maybe you don't because you're down south, so it's a little different.
Yeah, I didn't. So, and they're still alive, but yeah, the bugs and we have a lot of deer here. And so the deer love those leaves on those fruit trees. So that's one of the worst things for us.
Huh. I wonder if you have to like cover it. I don't know. So, and what did you buy? How big were they when you got them?
Not very big, probably 4 feet tall.
Okay. But they're like established that probably.
Yeah.
And do they already have fruit or not yet?
No. We'll see.
For the long haul, dude.
Right.
The long game.
Maybe a couple of years from now.
Well, when you get one, you'll have to mail me one, dude. Try
you got it.
Your natural plums, no pesticides, no all those other things they put in it.
Right. I bet the natural ones are very small compared to what we were used to seeing.
Dude, even the organic fruit, like sometimes I'll get the organic fruit and it goes bad quicker. I mean, I started reading a long time ago. I think it's called Seeds of Deception. I don't know if it's Michael or Jeffrey Smith, I think. And I had to put it down, but it was very, like, he talked about how, like, they'll take like a gene from a fish that whatever this gene prevents the fish from I'm getting moldy, and they'll put that gene in the seed of an apple tree. So like these apples that you have, they're not real. They're not pure apples anymore. They've got genes from all these different, from animals, from different plant. Like it is crazy what they've been able to do.
That is wild, man, because I was thinking about that yesterday. I was like, you know, all these GMOs, I'm sure a lot of people have written about this, but like, you know, we think about the pokes possibly a link to autism and these different things that we used to didn't have to worry about whatsoever. And then, but then all the GMO foods, that could also be something too, that's causing a lot of these, a lot of the allergies and stuff like that too, because
absolutely.
Yeah. I mean, I never knew of anyone who was allergic to anything, not even bees. I might've known one person. So,
yeah. Right. Well, I'm sure your kids' school is like, I remember my family, they said that like, it was like a peanut free school. Like you could not bring peanuts in no matter what, you know?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And like that wasn't around, and I'm a little bit younger than you, but that didn't exist when I was in, and there were kids that had like very few, maybe like the runts of the litter had an allergy. I always joke.
Right.
If you have allergies, you're a weak human, but yeah. It is crazy though. It is crazy.
Yeah, it is, man. My kid's old school. He hasn't been going to the new one long, but so it was like 4 or 5 months ago, and they were having a party. And so I can't remember what it was, but my wife bought this like huge pack of some kind of snacks.
Yeah.
And it didn't have peanuts in it, but I guess it was one of those where they had come in contact with peanuts. It probably said it on the box and we didn't look. So my son said that the teacher said, no one can have any of these. Wow. But she didn't send them back. So I'm like, she just kept them. It's like $30 worth of snacks. So
dude,
he's kind of mad about
it's
that.
It's so sad. Like what happened? It's like, we've just, if our ancestors could see us now, dude, it would be like, they would laugh. We would be less like, they would pick a 5-year-old child over our skill set that we have. You know, like
really would, man. Yeah. It's so bad. So bad.
We're so weak, but anyway, so I know you did a show on George Soros, and before I bookmarked tweets that I like find interesting, and I'm going to pull it up. Let me just hit share screen. Oh, here he goes. But I wouldn't have used this headline, but George Soros, the liberal Jew destroying America, is also a Jared Kushner business partner. So it's just funny that and it's an old article. It's like 4 years old, but I don't know who retweeted it, but I was like, huh, that's interesting that Kushner is business partners with George Soros, when I'm pretty sure Donald Trump Jr., he'll tweet stuff about, doesn't he? I think he does.
Probably. Oh, yeah. I'm sure.
Yeah. And it's just fun. Like, dude, your brother-in-law is in business with the guy, but, and crazy headline, maybe 2017 was a different time that they would go with that that label. But anyway, so you've done a lot of research on George Soros.
I'm surprised to see that tweet there, because that, you know, only certain people can make that tweet now. Very few. I've been hearing about George Soros ever since I got into politics, you know, over 20 years ago now. And but I never looked into him, because I just kind of was like, well, you know, I've heard everything, you know, he's the devil incarnate, he's a Nazi and all that stuff. But I was like, I just want to look myself, because I bet there's more there than we've been told, because usually they just scratch the surface and pick a few talking points and stick with those for a long time. So I started looking into him because I had done those shows. I'd done like 5 shows on Ukraine, and his name kept coming up in his the Open Society is his name, his main NGO, but he has one there in Ukraine called the International Renaissance Foundation. And turns out he's been in Ukraine since 92, I believe. He's poured a lot of money into it.
Does he live there or no?
No. I think he actually lives here. If I'm not mistaken, I think he lives in New York, but he's probably got multiple houses.
Yeah, absolutely.
But, you know, I saw that he'd given, I think at this point, it's almost 200,000 to Ukraine. And then when this whole thing happened with Russia, the Open Society donated 25 million immediately to Ukraine and started asking others to donate. They said their goal was 100 million. Mm-hmm. And so I started looking and I was like, wow, you know, what's his deal with Ukraine? It can't just be because he just feels bad for the people.
Right.
Because the more I looked, like when the Soviet Union broke up, even before it broke up, he had started investing in companies there in the Soviet Union. And then when they broke up, it was like he just went in and bought a lot of things dirt cheap, you know, because everything was falling apart and they were lucky to get anything out of their businesses and their property. So, you know, that's kind of his MO. He loves to go in and kind of reap the rewards after a disaster or while there's unrest or, you know, those kinds of things.
Right.
So I was like, I bet that he is doing the same thing in Ukraine. And I started looking up these different, like the Orange Revolution, I think was the, I get these mixed up. There's so many of these color revolutions now. I can't remember if the Orange Revolution was 2014 or 2004.
Yeah, the Orange Revolution was 2014.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, he had been there even before that, the International Renaissance Foundation. Like, they're always right there when these governments are overthrown. Like, Kazakhstan was like 3-4 months ago, I think, the uprising in Kazakhstan.
Yeah.
He's got a Kazakhstan Open Society Foundation there.
I'm sure.
Yeah, and I started seeing like there was a overthrow of the Georgian government a few years ago. I forget which revolution that's called, but his group was there in during that one. So it's just like time and time again, you see his organizations. And then I noticed that you would see the National Endowment for Democracy, which is supposedly non-governmental, but it's funded by tax dollars. And it's headed up by, you know, politicians for the most part, or people who've been in different presidential administrations. And so it works with the CIA. It's a CIA offshoot. And what I found out was, like, under Reagan, I may have mentioned this on the last show, but under Reagan, they invented this, created this National Endowment for Democracy, or NED, because of the Iran-Contra deal, because they were getting bad press for that. And so they're like, well, how can we come up with an organization that can do all the same things that we do, overthrow these governments, but not be called CIA? So they came up with National Endowment for Democracy. And then they put the International Republican Institute and the Democratic. I should have this. I'm sorry. I don't have my notes here with me.
Oh, you're fine.
I'm trying to pull them up, but they're not.
It's no worries, dude.
Anyway, it's the Democratic International Institute, I believe. Anyway, the DNI, I think it's the Democratic National Institute. Anyway, they all work together, and they basically overthrow these governments. So, like, McCain was the head of the Republican one until he died. And then this Madeleine Albright that just died, she was the head of the Democratic one. And they've got tons of these big businesses that are backing them, that donate to them as well. So you see the Soros organizations always working with these guys. There's also another one called Freedom House, which is anything but freedom. and you also see, you said, the you know, USAID Foundation.
Ooh,
or whatever.
Seen that one so many times with, I think Barack Obama's mom was in Kenya working as an archaeologist for USAID. Is that possible?
It could be, because it could be somebody like, they could have, from what I can understand, they're basically contractors, and they don't just give out aid. They actually And a lot of times they'll give out these millions of dollars worth of contracts to these huge corporations, like when there's a war, you know, or the government's been overthrown. So it's basically a way to open up these countries to, you know, to crony capitalism.
Wow.
So, dude. Yeah, it's a real racket. So you got all these, you know, Soros is always right there. And I think he knows how to play the game so well that our government works with him, because he can kind of get things done through his NGOs that they can't exactly get done. You know, they can do some things, but, like, you know, there are some people who can trace these organizations right back to the government. It doesn't take that much doing if you just know the names.
Dude, well,
so,
go ahead. Sorry. No, I was just, when you said about George Soros and cleaning up after, like, overthrows, I mean, we saw that with the Bolsheviks when they overthrew Wall Street, came in like a bunch of locusts and ate everything up. You know, that was probably why they wanted to open it up in the first place. Was so, and they did it after World War I Germany. The FDR was involved in some group that went in and bought like just people that had nothing, lost everything. They sold anything that they came in and swooped in with.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from, with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
You know, and they even made a company. I think that was AIC. I think American International Corporation. I could be in that. But I think that he created either that company or another one. FDR was like on the board. And that's all they did. Their stocks were like $30 a share in America, and only, you know, the top 1% could afford them. They bought thousands of them, and they just killed. They killed it.
Nothing much changes, does it?
No. I didn't mean to interrupt you, though.
No, you didn't interrupt. Please ask any questions you can think of. I know that it says that the Open Society Foundation, main one, is in over 120 countries. So that's a lot, man, because just think of the influence he has, you know, because he goes in. And it's kind of like, I believe this is his philosophy in life. After doing this research on him, I think he's kind of like, he works under moral self-licensing, which I tweeted about this, but like, you do something good to justify doing something bad. And I think that's his whole thing. I think that's his whole thing, because like, there's a famous 60 Minutes interview he did, I think in the early 90s. And I'll play a few clips of it on the first show I did about him. And it's a really good interview. It's hard to believe that somebody could actually do a hard, you know, hard questioning type of interview, because you don't ever see that anymore, hardly,
yeah, right.
Especially with somebody on his side of the aisle, you know, politics. But the guy really busts his balls, and, you know, he gets all, you know, he stutters, and you can tell when he's kind of really trying to think things out to answer the questions correctly. But a lot of people called him a Nazi because he's Jewish, but he was there in, I guess it was Austria during World War II. Mm-hmm. And his dad, like he came from a very wealthy family. I think his dad was a lawyer. And I think he lived on some sort of island. But his dad realized what was happening with the Jews in World War II. So he gave his son George to this man, one of his friends, and he was non-Jewish, and he said to tell everyone that he is his son. So that's what he did, and that's how he escaped, or whatever. That's the story.
Interesting. Okay.
And yeah, and there's a book about his dad that I really want to read. Supposedly he was a pretty interesting guy, but anyway, he went around with this so-called godfather, or whatever you want to call him, and that guy would collect the belongings of Jews during World War II. So and George had mentioned, I guess in one of his books, he's written a ton of books, like 16 books or so.
Of course he has, yeah.
Yeah. And he had mentioned that he had went along with him to collect those belongings. And the guy asked him, he said, did it bother you? Do you feel guilty? And he said, no guilt whatsoever. You know, he was real blunt about that. And that's where everybody said he was a Nazi. And I'm like, well, I want to find out for myself. So, you know, I looked and I was like, well, he's not really a Nazi. I mean, he was 14 years old when that happened.
Right.
Yet to say I have no guilt whatsoever, I thought was pretty bold, and he really seemed serious about it. And he also, he said, well, you know, it's kind of like the markets. If I wasn't there doing it, somebody else would. And the guy was kind of pressuring him about how he ran his business and how he got so wealthy. And he's like, well, I'm in a business where there is no moral values. There's no moral values meant to be in the investment business and in the business that I'm in. So I, you know, don't worry about that. So I was just like, wow, that's like every, he's supposed to be the elite liberal, you know,
right.
Bring up, you think liberal, you think George Soros, right? But then he's got that side that every liberal would say, that's a capitalist for you, you know, that mindset. So it's like, you know, just little things you can catch. Like there was one interview where he talked about how he liked to, you know, he's like, there's rules in society, but I like to, you know, make my own rules. I like to break the rules and make my own rules. So he has all these, you know, investments all around the world, but he also has these offshore accounts. And the guy kind of busted his balls on that as well. And at one point, George Soros was saying, you know, I'm for regulations because we need to be regulated, which, you know, I agree to a degree about that. But then he turned around and said, well, you know, we have these offshore accounts. And the guy's like, well, are you trying to escape regulations? And he's like, yes. So it's kind of like Jekyll and Hyde, you know?
Right. Well, it's interesting you said how he has like that caveat, like I do a good thing, I'll do a bad thing. If it's the Illuminati's motto is what's the motto? Odd man. Oh my God. Does the means justify the end?
You know, the ends justify. The end justifies the means. I don't know. Now I'm mixed up.
Yeah. That's the saying, right? Jesus, the end justifies the means. Yes. That's the saying. So yeah. But that's fun. That was their motto. Yeah. So I think Adam Weishaupt said that. So,
right. Yeah, exactly. And it's funny how a lot of these, the thinking behind a lot of these, you know, different groups and different individuals go back to that same thinking of the Illuminati, which I keep saying I'm going to put in, you know.
Said you were going to do that.
I've even got like 30 minutes of it recorded, but then the whole Ukraine thing happened and I got so caught up in that. And I'm kind of like, I kind of wish I hadn't. Because I don't really even see a clear good guy in that whole thing exactly, but
no.
But you know, I uncovered a lot of stuff that at least I thought was interesting.
Oh, dude, I'm sure you were one of the Ukraine experts because that's just. But it seems it's like taking, I don't know, a somewhat of a backseat. Ukraine, I'm talking about. It seems like the news isn't. I wanted to do. Or do you have anything else you want to, I'm sure you could keep going on about Soros, but I'll switch topics if you have any other big things to say or whatever.
No, nothing really. Just that, you know, everything that people say is pretty much true and easily provable. if you just, and I'll say this too, shout out to the book. I've got it here somewhere. What did I do with it? Oh, I didn't even know who Matt Palumbo was. And I guess he's,
I've seen that book.
I guess he's a Bongino guy, but,
is he?
Yeah. He's like, I guess he's co-wrote a couple books with him. So the reason I picked up the book is because there's no other books that really talk about the network. There's people, you know, there's books out there that talk about him and they might mention a couple of his networks and all that, but this guy really goes into like a lot of the networks that he's involved in. And he also gets into the local elections, and he's really put a lot of money into local elections around the world. I mean, around the country, around the world too. But people should, you know, if they're interested in it, that's a really good book.
Well, it's funny, we always talk about that, right? Like national politics, you're not going to make any difference. The only hope you have is changing local politics, which maybe the vote's a little more honest, you know, all those things. And it's just funny that he also, if George Soros agrees, we are on the right track with saying that, because I think in Philly, I'm pretty sure like our DA, the Mayor Kenny, I think they're all Soros affiliated people. And dude, all they had, like, I mean, I was very lucky because my crimes were, I got nothing for them. But like in Philly, if you do a murder, you're looking at like 7 years. That's it. You know, you drug crimes. Like there was people that would come into court. They like had a hard, like, you know, like caught with tons of stuff. They would come in a tank top late. They would get nothing, dude, because this DA is so, and what you get is now Philly just hit, like, you know, last year at the high, like 700 murders, like 300 more than they did the previous years. But yeah,
it's crazy because, oh, I'll finish up here. Like, especially like overseas, he really donates a lot of money to colleges overseas. Like he started Bard College. His ex-wife runs Bard College, and supposedly it's a big college. I don't know much about it, but I think it may be in New York. But he funds all these colleges around the world, and he funds a lot of times these like he funds Chatham House. He's got different. They're like the British CFR. Right. They've got scholarships. That's mainly how he does it. And a lot of it's for these like LGBTQ things, or these like, racial, things that you can take. Like what's the new, is it 1812? Is that the one that they're talking about? Like this new, I'm totally out of the loop here.
1619 project?
Yeah, that's it.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
You had the right air zone, but just wrong number. Right.
But yeah, but he funds those kinds of things mainly. And it has to be because, you know, those things really aren't to help people in their lives. How's that going to help you in your professional career? I think it's actually those kind of classes actually cause more division because they're teaching people to just hate somebody else without even knowing them. And that's really, it's culture. He's teaching, it's a way to really poison the culture. So yeah, that's my opinion.
Dude, it's so powerful. I mean, every leader has recognized that if you can get the youth,
yeah,
you'll have the future. I think that's like a butchered Lenin quote or somebody's quote that said that. But yeah, it's just so powerful.
Motley Crue says that at the first of one of their songs. He who has the youth has the future.
Oh, so maybe they inspired by Lenin or Hitler, somebody. But that's hilarious, dude. So since we're talking about Ukraine, I wanted to, we were talking about the rich people as well. So did you see Jeff Bezos's tweets recently?
No.
Oh, dude. All right. Here, let me put it up. So he was, so you know how the Biden administration is talking about pay their fair share, blah, 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 blah. Well, Bezos, dude, who you would think would just play along, he killed. So his was, the quote was from like Joe Biden or whatever, one of the people in his administration talking about how it doesn't require a huge leap to figure out why one of the wealthiest individuals on earth opposes an economic agenda for the middle class, fights inflation for the long haul and adds historic deficit. He's basically just saying Amazon needs to pay their fair share. And he mentions Amazon. And so Bezos says, look, a squirrel. This is the White House's statement about my recent tweets. They understandably want to muddy the topic. They know inflation hurts the neediest the most. But unions aren't causing the inflation, and neither are wealthy people. Also, remember the administration tried to add $3.5 trillion to federal spending. They failed. But if they succeeded, inflation would be even higher than it is today. And inflation is today at a 40-year high. So what's...
Wow.
That's... I want your... I know I read that fast, but...
No, that's good.
What do you...
That's really interesting.
What's your opinion on that?
That's really interesting. Bezos is kind of like one of those... He came by wealth a little bit differently than the other, like the Rockefellers, you know, like those legacy people who are all in, the Rothschilds and all that, who are all in on this inclusive capitalism and just this crazy wokeness. So who knows? I mean, I don't want to say he's a good guy, but you know, it's like, it is kind of nice to hear somebody say, you know, you're full of shit, you know,
well, yeah, I was just shocked, dude. Like it seems like out of character for a billionaire like Bezos to say, whoa, you're saying it's not my, like, I feel like they just accept that's part of the territory, like to be called like, you know, a conspiracy wet dream. They're just like, well, I got billions of dollars. They're usually slobs. So what does it matter? They're like, say what they want.
Well, his wife did take a good chunk of that.
That's true.
Well, you know, it's like it would be. I'm surprised that we don't hear this more. More of these really wealthy guys saying, you know, the more you take, the more you waste to the government, because it's such a, you know, they're giving $40 billion to Ukraine. They've given billions to Ukraine already. It's crazy. You know, when the country is in the shape it's in, if we were like all, you know, just up to our knees with money and everything was like great, it would be one thing, but like, it's just insane to me.
Oh, I don't know how. And I drive around. I'm interested in what, if you see this, but I see like some Ukraine signs in people's yards and windows. And I think that I would say it's probably like 5%. And I'm in like a pretty mixed area of like, it's Republican, but you know, it's probably like middle class where I'm around, like it's called the main line. That's like all the elite, you know, elite liberals kind of people that live in $1 million homes. But I was just surprised that even like some of the houses, they're not great houses, that they have that in their window. Like, how do you take that? How do you say, okay, yeah, let's give, you know, I clearly I'm struggling. The economy isn't great, but yeah, let's send a $40 billion to some country that 90% of America could not point out to on a map.
I would love to talk to one of these people, honestly, and pick their brain. I would love to, like some of the liberals I used to know, I would love to hear their argument for it and why they think it should happen. Because, you know, I come out of that time when the liberals supposedly hated war, even if it would seem to be justified. And, you know, now I'm kind of more on that side of things because I see that it's a racket, but you know, it's just, it doesn't make any sense whatsoever. I don't see how anyone could to make a good case for that and be serious about it with our country in the shape it's in.
Well, dude, and this all, I don't know you know, I've been doing those episodes on the history of central banking, and it's been like so fascinating how each country over time, they've had high usury rates, and then like a Caesar like character will come in and oust them. It happens in England twice in like the 1100s and 1400s. And then these countries just have all these years, like England, as the example, had like 400 years of, that's when they built those beautiful churches, the things that people say Tartaria made. They worked less time than any, they worked only.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kid's PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
They had over 160 to 180 days off a year with festivals and parties. And this was just like the peasant class. They still could afford, they had meat almost every meal. They had clothes, all these things. They worked, half 50% of the year, the other 50% they chilled. And then slowly but surely we get tricked, and they institute these usury rates. And it's just so sad. Like all of us are living enslaved in this debt-based economy, and no one can, they just want to, and I'm sure that's the goal, just to point it to the other side, to not blame whose really fault it is that we have inflation, that we have exorbitant amounts of debt in the 300 of trillions with all the liabilities that we have, be it like Medicare and stuff. It's just fascinating that we are continually tricked each time. I don't know where I was going with that point, but yeah.
Yeah. And it's like the national debt doesn't matter anymore. Even I don't even see Republicans, or maybe they do, but I just haven't seen them make a huge issue out of that. Aren't we like 30 some odd trillion now?
32. Yeah. I think 32 or 34.
It's just unbelievable, because that was always a huge issue, especially, you know, for Republicans. They always at least talked about it, even though they were hypocrites and they always raised the debt anyway.
Right. Yeah.
But they at least talked about it. And then now it's just like, you know.
Dude, like Jackson, and I think someone got into arguing with me. They're like, oh, he was mean to the Native Americans. I know he was mean to the Native Americans. But putting that aside, dude, he hated the bank so much. And think, like, we were under the central banking. We were, I think after the War of 1812, we were in something like $100 million of debt. And AJ comes in, he says, in the government at that point, they had like 30% of like deposit. The government's deposit was all in central banking. He pulls it all. He says, you're done. And he was able to pay off the debt and at a surplus of $50 million for the, like, that is amazing. $100 million then, I don't know what that is with
the wow.
Today, but it's a lot, dude. It's in the, it would be a trillion. I don't know. I don't know what the, you know, the exchange rate would be, but it was a shit ton of money. And he was able to pay all of it back and put a surplus beating. Like, he truly, that is an amazing character, dude, to be able to do that, to beat this, the, you know, the Rothschilds, the Bank of England, to beat them back. It's like all, it's unfathomable. I couldn't imagine that's never going to happen. You know?
No, no. And I think it was Charles Savoy, the Pilgrim Society guy, told me that there were, I think, two attempts on Andrew Jackson's life while he was doing that. So, yeah, and he, wow. And
you know, he beat one with the cane so badly. The guy shot him. I think he might have hit him, and then he beat him with his cane like an inch from death.
That's great.
I know, dude. Like, that was men was men. That was awesome.
I mean, yeah, and everything revolves around money and debt, and you know, it makes or breaks a country. And you know, like the, you know, I know there's a ton of quotes, at least by Thomas Jefferson, about debt. I know there's others too about. I know that Washington warned about debt, and it's like we our representatives have done everything that the people who founded the country said, don't do this, you know, and they did it immediately, like almost immediately. It's like, couldn't wait to do it, you know? And it's like, we were trying to do something different here, you know?
Yeah.
And then, yeah, the debt is like, you know, over, I don't know when it began, probably in the late 1800s, but like this, you know, they say that the 80s and the 90s were like the decades of decadence, and they were, to a degree, but like everybody was marketed all these things. They just had to have them. And everybody wanted to keep up with the Joneses, as they say. Mm-hmm. So if, you know, my neighbor gets this car, I got to have a nice car, or, you know, whatever it might be. And then technology started coming along, and people wanted all the technological gadgets. And then now, of course, you got to have the newest Apple phone every couple of years. And so it's just like we have been conditioned to believe that we have to have all these things. And therefore, a lot of us who don't have as much money have to go in debt for these things. And we just believe it's normal. But that's not what our, you know, ancestors believed. They didn't think that you should go into debt like that, because, you know, when you're in debt like that, you have a noose over your head, basically.
Right. You do, dude. I just, and you can see like that Bank of England charter was so, it was the toppling stone. And I think that was passed like late 1600s. It allowed Britain to, you know, wage limitless war against France, who wasn't under central banking. And you can see the allure to it. If you have a corrupt, or maybe even just, I saw an interesting like quote or about Woodrow Wilson, how I always say he's like one of the most evil men in the world, but he was the author, or the guy that wrote the central banking book. He suggests that Wilson was actually just like an idiot and didn't know banking, and thought, oh, well, all these smart people, kind of like what Eisenhower, he said he surrounded himself with the smartest people in the room, which were the crooked, you know, robber barons. But, and so he believed him. He said, okay, yeah, like that makes sense. And this way we won't have to, you know, all these depressions and panics that we keep having that were because of the bankers all through the 1800s when we didn't have the central bank. But it topples it's just so powerful, and nobody knows this. They I don't know what they think. I guess they just don't think about the monetary system. Most people probably don't care.
They don't, you know, it's like you try to talk to them about it, and it's just, it's no use usually to even try to have that conversation.
No. off the central bit. So back to Ukraine. Let me pull up the other bookmark tweet I had, and I want you to explain, because I like know all I know is Azov Battalion has swastikas. That's literally where my knowledge goes. I could find Ukraine on a map though, but I cannot. So this video, so it's today. So for people listening, it's a video of incendiary munitions being used at Azov stall, which I guess this is like a steel plant that a lot of the Azov battalion, correct me if I'm wrong, any Rodman, was like, I guess, hunkering down kind of. And it looks like they're dropping, someone suggested thermite, and it looks like a bunch of fireworks. So there was a joke that if you, the media is going to play it in reverse and say that the Azovs won and they were shooting off fireworks. But what does this mean? Can you explain this to me, Odd Man? Like, what's going on with what is Azovstal and the, like, do you know what that this is?
Well, you know, I've kind of been out of the loop since I did the last show. I just had to take myself out of it because I was so engulfed with it. I was like, I'm never going to do another show about another subject if I don't just stop watching the news. But I believe it's probably, I think Azovstal is a place. I think that the Azov Battalion actually come from that area. Okay. And it, that may be the factory where, I know the news was saying for a while, at first they were saying it was just civilians hidden, hiding in this factory.
Yeah.
And then it came out, I think they even had video and pictures that, no, the Azov Battalion are hiding there too. And so that finally the media had to admit that. So I'm wondering if that's the same factory. I bet it is.
Yeah, I'm sure it is. Yeah. Yeah. Because I saw it was like a steel fortress or something like that. But I saw that also, like, so, and again, correct me if I'm wrong in any of this, but Azov was important because they're like, I guess they must be very close to the Russian border. And they're like they were the first line of defense that allowed the rest of Ukraine reinforcements to build up. While they, since they're a somewhat formidable force, they were able to hold off the Russians for a little bit.
You know, it's, I've heard such mixed messaging on that. You know, they came about, from what I can tell, in 2014 during that whole overthrow of the government where, you know, the Obama administration overthrew the government there. And so that's where they came, and they didn't have an army, a military at the time. So these, it was like a volunteer army of these Azov guys. Or that's what they called themselves. And, you know, that they were very adamant about how they hated, you know, ethnic Russians, Jews, and others. And that was a huge, you know, huge part of what they did. And they ended up incorporating them into the military officially. I think the National Guard, their version of the National Guard in Ukraine. Okay. So they have their own, like, military barracks. They have their own magazines they put out. They have Azov schools where they train. Wow. So it's a pretty big deal. It's, they're very well funded, and you can see that they're well funded by their, just their uniforms, their equipment. And we know that the Israelis have been funding or arming them for years now, because all these different organizations have asked them to stop and they wouldn't. And of course now we're arming them, and the CIA has been there training them for, I think, since at least 2014, 2015, from the reports I've seen. So
what they explain that to me. Why is Israel, is it like a fake war to, like, you know, have animosity with Russia? Like, why are they funding Nazi soldiers that are openly Nazis?
You know, I think it probably just comes down to money, honestly. Okay. And I think they probably got the money from the West and maybe from Soros types to buy that equipment. And that's my opinion, though. There may be more to it. I'm sure more people out there know more than I do. Yeah. But it seems to me like the Israelis are in pretty damn good with the Russians. But they're in good with the Ukrainians, too. They did, like, I think it was like 2020. They had a deal. It was like an open trade deal with Ukraine, but then they're doing business with different Russian entities. They have a Vladimir Putin street in Bethlehem.
No way.
Yes. Yes.
EBay.
Yeah.
Really?
And in fact,
wow. Yeah.
And I read an article from, I think maybe 2019 or maybe a little bit later than that. But anyway, Putin went over there, and the Russians apparently funded this, type of a place for kids to go and like work out and get exercise, and just kind of a place for them to go after school. So Russia sponsored that. And, you know, so they've had other dealings. I know at one point RT News used RRSAT to get their, the RR satellite is a company owned by Israel. an Israeli company. So that's how they were getting their, you know, their station out to everyone, transmitting it. Excuse me. I couldn't think of the right word. Yeah. Now, I don't know if they still use RRSAT, but they were. And
that
so
is crazy.
Yeah. And then there's other businesses there, too, that I can't think of the names off the top of my head. But so they've had a pretty good. And that's one of the things I thought was interesting, because we, if we went by what we're told over here, you know, Russia hates Israel and they're, Iran and Russia are going to get Israel. You know, it's like, I don't think that Russia is going to do that. Business Insider even had an article, right, like maybe 2 weeks into this whole Russia-Ukraine war. And it said, like, it was like eight large planes come into Israel with Russian military, or not Russian military. Billionaires. Yeah. So, you know, they have, they'll do business with whoever, both countries, I think. I don't think they care. And I think Ukraine will take anybody's money because, you know, they were in the, not the Panama Papers, but the other one,
the Pandora
Papers. Yeah. So they had more oligarchs and guys implicated, government guys from Ukraine implicated in that than any other country. So, you know, I think they've had so many of these guys who probably, it's kind of like organized crime, I think. A lot of this money's been funneled in there. It's untraceable a lot of times. And, you know, no matter what they do, it's like the U.S. just thinks they can throw money at everything, you know, and fix it. And these guys just take the money and run, you know, and do whatever. And they're probably doing all kinds of horrible things with it, you know, and it's been happening there for several decades at least, you know. So. Well,
dude, so this was a, and I'm going to show this. So I think Ukraine is the third or fourth largest producer of wheat. But so the news on the weekend was how India banned wheat exports with immediate effect. They're the number three largest producer of wheat. It goes America, Russia, India, Ukraine. Maybe I'm wrong on that. And then they also are one of the largest producers of rice. But I just find this all interesting that, so for anyone listening, the tweet is, India banned wheat exports with immediate effect. The world was counting on its supply to alleviate the constraints by the war in Ukraine. So Ukraine is a normally huge producer of wheat. This war is obviously affecting that production. And now India bans their wheat exports. I wonder what your take is all of this, you know, they often do kill two birds with one stone. Is this a grand scheme to produce a food shortage in the world? What do you think that?
Well, you know, when I went into this first, I just kept finding so much out about Ukraine and how the West had been like pushing all this money into it and supporting all these different anti-Russian guys for their government and stuff like that. And I was totally like, well, you know, this is just a Western thing where they just don't want Russia to have Ukraine, because it's like Zbigniew Brzezinski said years ago, he said, without Ukraine, Russia can't be an empire. And I think that the West, they wanted Russia to be a part of the whole Great Reset, New World Order, but I think they didn't want Russia to have a big part in it. They, you know, and I think Putin maybe was like, well, no, we want a bigger part. And I think that was the animosity, or that was what I was thinking. Mm. But the more I look into it, it just seems like, you know, when these things happen, the timing of them and, you know, what happens because of them, you know, not just the war itself, but all these different policies and everything you're talking about right now with the wheat and the different supply shortages. I have to wonder, dude, you know, because it's happening almost at a perfect time after the whole COVID thing and how everybody, you know, all these businesses have been decimated and this, everybody is like beat down mentally. And I just have to think it's very suspicious. And also this week's show is coming out is about Russia. And I kind of looked at how they were kind of on board with, the Great Reset, the World Economic Forum, Sustainable Development, Agenda 21, 2030, and all that. And I tried to take a deeper dive into it because a lot of people in the alt media are just saying, no, you know, Russia's good, you know, Putin's, you know, and they're not looking. Yeah. And like, you're a conspiracy theorist if you think anything else. I've heard people outright say that. And I'm like, well, you know, if this country that you didn't like, you were suspicious of, was a part of WEF was a part of Agenda 21 and all that stuff, you would be like, you'd be all over it.
Yeah.
So you're just ignoring that because you like them. So it's just a simple thing. You're just, you know, being biased. It's an emotional thing. So I'm really starting to wonder, man, if this is all happening for a strategic reason, you know, to bring everybody into the Great Reset and the New World Order and the Agenda 21 and all that, because it seems to me like that's what's happening.
Yeah. It's just, and again, like, you know, there's all, look, hindsight, we always can see a few, like with 9/11, there's like 10 different reasons why it worked great. You know, Larry Silverstein to getting an endless war in the Middle East and get opium production up and get more bases and all this military. So there's always, you know, a few birds they're hitting with the stone, but this food shortage, like, people, you know, no one's talking about it because they don't want people to panic. And, you know, Roe versus Wade, keep, as they hold signs, you know, keep your laws out of my pussy or whatever lovely phrases they use. That's stealing the attention, when I think that there's something serious, like in, like, America, I was a beautiful graph, but I should have saved it, but it was showed the world of who imports for their food and who exports their surplus. And America exports about 22% of our surplus, of like 22% of our total production, which is surplus. Britain imports everything. Africa imports everything. You would think Africa would have great farming, dude. They import all of Africa, maybe North Africa. There's an exception. They would die without the importing of food, which is mind-blowing. That's a whole continent that can't grow food for itself. So these food shortages, I had like a tweet, it's not gonna, you know, it's gonna cause our prices to go up $23 a pound for a ribeye steak. Insane. But our prices are just gonna go up. But there is something seriously gonna happen in the third world, in Africa, in South America, Brazil, and one other is the only ones that have enough to export their surplus. They're going to run out of food, dude. You know where they're coming to, America, Europe. And so I think that's my guess is that they're doing, like how you just said, that was a great idea about bringing everyone into the Great Reset. That would be a great way to do it if you starve the third world.
Absolutely, man. Absolutely. And, you know, I've talked about this a few times, but I ran across this quote by Karl Marx, and it was his one enemy theory. And he's basically said that you have to have a clear enemy who seems like the epitome of evil. And then the other side has to look like the example of everything that's good. And you
who said that? Sorry.
Karl Marx.
Wow. Well, that was very smart, poetic.
And this was pre-World War One. So, I mean, World War II, excuse me. So, like, boom, then you get Hitler. And that was like, perfect.
Yes. Yeah.
And so every guy who they think is a little bit bad gets compared, right?
Right.
He is, you know. So, you know, that's what they're doing to Putin, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, Biden makes sure to call it Putin's war. And, you know, all the people in the media are like, this crazy Putin, you know, it's like they make him sound just totally insane. And it's like, it really seems like that's the way they're going. Like, if it is a strategy, that's the strategy they're using. And it's working like a charm. And, you know, it's got everybody so divided and,
yeah,
I don't know, man. The timing just to me is just almost, it's almost too much to say it's there's not something else going on.
Yeah. Go ahead.
Cause why, you know, cause if you think about it, this whole thing has been going on for a long time, and maybe it was because Zelensky was like talking about being a part of NATO. And maybe somebody said that Zelensky even talked about getting nukes in the press, which would probably never happen, but maybe that was what pushed Putin. But, you know, this whole thing has been going back and forth for a long time. And it's like, why now? And then the question I have is, what does he stand to gain? What does the Russian government stand to gain? Because now they're the enemy of NATO, the most powerful force in the world. And now NATO is getting these other countries to come on to NATO. Russia loses. It's a big lose-lose for Russia.
Right.
So, and they're demonized by all the Western media.
Yes.
So I don't think Putin's that stupid. This guy is a former KGB agent.
Yeah.
I don't think he's absolutely that stupid.
Well, it's just because you said about bringing the man, we're sometimes, dude, we are on the same wavelength, odd man.
Love it.
Right as you were talking about that, I was pulling up this article, The Hidden City Under Helsinki. It's a Finnish city that can hold 600,000 people, that was built after World War II. And that's because they didn't join NATO. So they built this back then. 900,000 people, excuse me, a third of more than the city's population. It's got, for people just listening, this is a softball court. They have go-karts. They have stairs. They have a carport so everyone can park their car and not block the door. This has nothing to do with the Great Reset, but I just found that amazing that Finland was so, you know, back probably when there was honest politicians and they were actually worried, they built this beautiful structure. Did you see this article or no?
No, I didn't. But this reminds me, I can't remember the name of the movie. It was like two, three years old. And it was the, I can't remember the guy's name. I think he was the guy that was in Gladiator, maybe. Australian guy. And then it was the girl who plays, she was Deadpool's girlfriend who died. That was his wife. And apparently this apocalyptic, like all this stuff started happening. Like these, I think it was like a comet was coming to destroy the earth or whatever. And they were all running and they got separated. But anyway, at the end, the man, the woman and their child got on a plane and they went to Greenland and they had an underground bunker.
No way.
So, yeah.
Dude, I mean, archery, volley, but I wonder, that would be a great move too. If you're trying to get, you know, your one world government using Russia, like I think you just said, and I'm just repeating you, but you force, or it looks like it, you're forced. Russia is so bad. It's forcing these neutral countries into the NATO, into all these other globalized organizations. You know, just like we said, there's so many birds with one stone that's this is becoming a successful, whatever it is.
Yeah. And if it, you know, if it is that, you know, they'll probably eventually either kill Putin or pretend like he's dead and he'll disappear forever. He'll probably go down to Argentina or wherever.
Yeah. He's probably hanging out with Hitler in Argentina.
Just live happily ever after, you know, because it's a perfect plan, really. I mean, have the whole world mad at this one guy because they're going to blame everything on this. They already are.
Oh yeah.
And they were doing it before it even happened, you know.
Right.
They're basically warning us, well, you know, we're going to run out of gas. We're going to have to suffer, you know, like Biden was talking about us suffering and it's like, dude, nothing's even happened yet, you know.
Yeah, and they're going to use that with the food short cuz I don't think people would, like, it's come, and the oil, a oil billionaire in New York, can't remember his name, he had a quote like 2 days ago. He said diesel fuel on the East Coast will be rationed during summer. I mean, there.
Wow.
And I don't mean to scare people, like you should prepare now, though. But there is going to be prices are going to be insane. And I eat a lot of meat, so this is going to shoot me in the foot. But yeah, like it's going to go up or you're going to go without because they're going to blame Russia. They're going to blame whatever they can. Not, it's definitely not their fault. But yeah, it's coming, dude. It's it is coming.
Yeah, dude. I mean, I'm hearing people or seeing people online and talking about shortage of, they can't get eggs. They can't get, you know, hamburger meat. One guy told me that a pound of hamburger meat was $12.50 at his grocery store. Just like crazy stuff like that. And I've noticed the last couple of times I went to the grocery store, there are some spots where are almost completely empty. So I don't know what the deal is, but I assume it has something to do with that. And yeah, I think the average person is not prepared whatsoever. And we've been trying to get prepared the last couple of years. And I think that, you know, we could hold out for a little while, but I think the average people, you know, don't have a plan whatsoever. They don't think it can ever happen here, you know?
No. And that's what, again, this is like, I'm not a big Great Reset. Like I didn't even research the Great Reset a lot, or I know what the premise is, but this is how you truly take over and make moves. It's like that final push. You have a food shortage, you have mass immigration, you have massive amounts of crime. People are begging for a sense of normalcy to return. And that's how you institute a police state, a totally surveillance state, even more than it already is. You institute, you know, a one world government. And I mean, you're on your, like, we are just those few steps away from, you know, that kind of crazy change.
I know. And it's like, with everything that's happened, you know, I'm going to really feel bad for people, but if they try to come here and take my food, I'm going to pow pow. But like, no, you know, I feel
Jesus was a socialist and a communist, odd man. If you didn't know, that's what the non-Christians tell me.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Yeah. It's like you try to warn these people, you know, and they act like you're insane, you know, but just something is simple as get a huge bag of rice, like a 15 pound bag of rice or beans or something, and some extra water, you know, some things that you'll have. So if the shit hits the fan, you will at least be able to stay alive until maybe you can get to a better point.
Until the FEMA camps come, then you'll be all right.
But exactly.
Also, you should get, like, you know, tradable things. Not that, because I know we're not all flush, but like alcohol, cigarettes, coffee. People will always trade because they're commodities that people will do whatever to get a cigarette or do whatever to get alcohol and all that. If you can get hard drugs and store those, that's a good idea too, people. I'm joking. I don't know if that's allowed to say on YouTube, but yeah.
You'd be the king in there in no time flat.
You could be like Pablo Escobar in the end times. So if you guys got to connect to maybe cartels, mafia, pick up as much as you can. I guarantee you're going to get a great investment on that. Great return.
Dude, I'm not even kidding. I'm thinking about learning to make moonshine because, you know, it used to be a big thing around this area, and now nobody, you know, does it because they don't have to. But, man, it's supposed to be pretty simple.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, yeah, dude. If those – no – I'm joking. If those hillbillies can do it, you can do it, dude.
Not for real. I mean, you're right, though, man. That would be something that's going to – people will barter for that, and they'll always want those type of things.
Yeah, absolutely, dude.
Make bullets, get you something that you can make – press the bullets?
Yeah. That's.
Oh, man. Reason. Yeah.
Basically live like those people – if you guys ever watched Life Below Zero in Alaska, that's how we need to be training. Like those. Do you ever watch that show?
No.
Oh, dude, you would love. It's awesome. They're real men, like Josh in the chat. Real men stuff, like building a cabin. You don't need a permit. Building a water wheel to catch salmon. No permits needed, buddy. You just build it. You know, they're amazing.
Nice. That's people. The way it should be.
Yes, dude. Absolutely. But that was. I had a lot of. So where can everyone find you? All those or any last comments first, and then. You know, where can people find you?
Oh, just that. Thank you very much for having me, man. It's always a blast. You can find me at theoddmanout.podbean.com. Also, you can check me out at alternatecurrentradio.com. I'm on there. I do a show on there called Boiler Room on Thursdays. They got a bunch of shows. And then if you want to find me on social media, usually it's Twitter and Instagram, and that's _ The Odd Man Out.
Nice, dude. Well, I appreciate you always come on here. And so, guys, I hope you enjoyed the stream. I thought it went pretty well. How about you?
Man, I stumbled there at first. I don't know, man. I didn't have my thinking cap on. But, I thought the second half was fantastic.
Oh, no, dude. The whole thing was good. So thanks for listening, everybody. Tomorrow I got Don Jeffries on. And then Wednesday we'll finish central banking. Russia is the focus, Imperial Russia. But thanks for coming, everybody that was here. David, I will send. We'll see you next. Send me an email or send me a message on Twitter because I need your skills. All right, everybody. Thanks so much. We'll talk soon. Bye.